The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Eagles number 10, Revenge of Eagles. When Falcon McAllister buys a silver mine in the Arizona Territory from his old friend Doc Holliday, he gets more than he bargained for. On the way to inspect the mine, Falcon's stagecoach is robbed and two passengers are killed. One of those passengers is Yaakos Gan, the daughter of Apache chief Kitano. It falls to Falcon to deliver the Indian princess's body back to her tribe.
Kitano, I must tell you that if you take up the path of war, this time the white man will not stop. His soldiers will kill all of you, not just the warriors, but the women and children as well. Your numbers are small now. When the war is finished, there'll be no Apache left.
I think there is a way to not have war, if you will help. We want you to find the men who killed Yaakos Gan, and kill them.
Well, that I will do with pleasure.
There is something else. When you kill these men, we want you to take their scalps and bring them to us, so that we may see that you have done as you said.
So begins Falcon's quest to avenge the death of Yaakos Gan by bringing down Fargo Ford and his outlaw gang.
You're Falcon McAllister, eh? I thought we killed you.
You thought wrong.
What are you doing here now?
I thought I might have a drink. Spend a little time with a woman. That woman.
Uh-uh. Better pick yourself another one. This one's coming back up with me.
I don't think she wants to do that. And I don't want her to do it either.
What the hell do I care what she wants? She's got no choice. Neither do you, mister. I got my gun in my hand.
Oh yeah, I see the gun. But what are you gonna do with it?
What do you mean, what am I gonna do with it?
Well, here's the thing. You're pointing that gun at a girl. She's not your problem now. I am. If you move it toward me, I'm gonna kill you. If you shoot her, I'm gonna kill you. If you so much as twitch, I'm gonna kill you. In fact, the only way you're gonna get out of this alive is to drop your gun right now.
You're fucking crazy. Your gun's still in your holster. And if you don't get out of here right now, I'm gonna kill this girl.
Prove it.
Add to this lethal mix a band of Apache renegades who decide to take the matter of revenge into their own hands, and you've got a recipe for blazing six-gun action. Don't miss this classic tale of death and vengeance in the Old West, Revenge of Eagles.
I see you boys still can't stay out of mischief, can you?
Josiah Finch!
In the West, you make your own law. But when government officials from Washington are sent to Texas to fix border relations, Matt, Sam, and Josiah Finch are handicapped in stopping the murderous Whaley Gang.
It's news of a stage robbery. Apparently, the Dingo Whaley Gang is at work again.
Apparently, the gang killed two passengers, a man and a woman. Damned if they didn't head to Mexico.
Now you know why I've been after him.
They've dynamited the jail! It's gone! Totally gone! Get out! They'll be here next!
Get out of here! Get out now!
The Whaley Gang attacked last night in San Angelo just as the Rangers said they would. They apparently got away.
The outlaws are in Mexico now. We'll be going after them.
No, that won't be allowed.
What did you say?
I said you will not be allowed to cross the Rio Grande into Mexico. That is the agreement we made with Mexican officials. Those are the orders from Washington.
This is no longer just a matter of law. The Whaley Gang almost killed our friend. It's now a matter of blood, even if it extends across the river. I'm not gonna let anybody stand in our way.
Blood Bond number 8, San Angelo Showdown.
Thank you. And now, for our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Previously in Deathstalker Destiny.
You and your people plotted to leech this colony dry and then move on. I call that treason.
Hang them all. They're all politicians. All dirty.
Clarissa, you're looking very well. Very well.
You've done so much for me, Toby. I don't know how to thank you.
Word is coming in that Robert Campbell has given up his captaincy, resigned from the fleet, and come home to Golgotha to re-establish his clan.
I think we're ready to risk a few carefully controlled appearances. Did you have anyone in mind, ma'am?
I thought Constance Wolfe.
Have I found a friend in you?
I think perhaps you have, Constance Wolfe. How are preparations going for your wedding to the Deathstalker?
It's due to take place 6 months from now, barring any... complications.
The aliens you have encountered till now are nothing to the real enemy that lies waiting. There's something alive in the Dark Void. They call themselves the Recreated, and soon they will destroy everything that lives.
Of late, dear Grace has emerged into the limelight with a vengeance, becoming a major social figure. Something's finally kicked her awake, and I want to know what.
A temporary and strictly limited alliance with Shub is in everyone's best interests.
I made the rebel victory possible.
For your own reasons. Now get the hell out of here before I decide to test just how strong you made me.
You stood off the Mater Mundi? I'm impressed.
What do you want, Shrek?
I bedded her, Campbell, long before you ever did.
I'll kill you! Kill you!
After what I'd done to Gregor, I thought it best to go to ground for a while. It was cruel of me to let you think I was dead, I know. Say you forgive me, Evie.
Of course I forgive you. I always do, don't I?
I know why you've been having nightmares, little brother. I know where you went and what you saw. And I shall take great delight in seeing your face when your nightmare embraces all humanity.
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Deathstalker Destiny. Narrated and directed by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, David Coyne, Anne Flosnick, Dolores King-Williams, Karen Carbone, Nick Sampson, Casey Jones, and Mort Shelby. Episode 2, Burning Bridges. It was a cold and cloudy day when Jack Random and Ruby Journey came back to Golgotha, homeworld of the Empire. A crowd of reporters huddled together beside the main landing pad, as much to keep warm and pass hip flasks around as to share the latest gossip. Everyone knew what had happened on Loki. They'd all seen the holo footage, seen the bodies hanging from the walls of Adar. Parliament had sent Random and Ruby to put down a rebellion on Loki. Jack did it by hanging the leaders of both sides, and a great many of their followers too. Public response throughout the Empire was divided. They wanted to see the guilty punished, but by courts and tribunals, not by one man, answerable to no one. After all, who knew when such a man might turn on them? Parliament was predictably outraged, not least because most of the hanged dead were politicians appointed by Parliament. So they sent a ship to Loki to pick up Jack Random and Ruby Journey and bring them back to Golgotha to answer a few very pointed questions. They also sent a small army of guards along, just to make it clear how upset they were. The ship had landed over an hour ago, But as yet, no one had disembarked. No one on board or in the port control tower was answering any questions. The reporters were beginning to wonder if anyone was left alive on board. It wouldn't have surprised any of the journalists present if Jack Random and Ruby Journey had killed all the guards sent to escort them and sent the ship home empty. The lock remained open for several seconds of silent tension, and then a single guard captain stepped out onto the pad. He nodded tiredly to the journalists, his face grim.
Jack Random and Ruby Journey want it to be known that they are not in the best of moods and will take any intrusive questions as personal insults. Anyone wishing to get really probing should make his next of kin known in advance. They've got a few things they want to say, but you'll have to wait for the rest until after they've spoken to Parliament. Everyone got that?
There was a certain amount of confused nodding and not a few sideways glances, and then Thompson of the Golgotha Times stepped forward. A tall, gangling sort with piercing eyes, he'd covered everything from wars to gossip at Lionstone's court, and there wasn't much left that frightened him.
A few small queries, Captain. First, why are you acting as their messenger boy when you and your fellow guards were sent to escort them back in semi-disgrace? And second, shouldn't you be wearing some kind of weapon?
The other reporters took in the empty holster and scabbard on the captain's hips.
Sir, Random made us give up all our weapons. He said he found them distracting.
While that was still sinking in, 100 other guards filed silently out of the airlock. None of them were armed, and most of them looked demoralized, upset, and occasionally downright twitchy. They all carefully avoided the reporter's gaze as they formed two ranks on either side of the airlock, and then snapped to attention as Jack Random and Ruby Journey finally disembarked. The cameras immediately went for close-ups of their faces, transmitted to the journalists via their comm implants, but the two maze survivors looked much the same as they always had, except perhaps a little colder around the eyes. Random and Ruby came to a halt before the assembled press pack, who suddenly had to fight down a collective urge to fall back several yards. The man and woman before them had always felt dangerous, but now there was something about them that was positively disturbing. They had the look of people who were no longer interested in taking prisoners. The reporters looked at the dispirited guards and swallowed hard. Whatever had happened to so thoroughly upset the guards, the journalists were pretty damn sure they didn't want it happening to them. Random looked them over, unsmiling.
Where's Toby Schreck? I thought he'd be here. Only damn journo I ever had any time for.
Again, only Thompson found a voice to answer with.
He and Flynn are covering the forthcoming royal wedding. He's got exclusive coverage rights.
Ah, they're still going ahead with that constitutional monarch rubbish, are they? How are Constance and Owen?
The reporters stirred and looked at one another.
You haven't heard?
Heard what? We've been busy.
Owen Deathstalker and Hazel Dark are missing, presumed dead. Constance Wolfe will be marrying Robert Campbell instead.
Random and Ruby looked at each other.
They can't be dead. They just can't. I'd know. I'm sure I'd know if they were.
We haven't been mentally linked to either of them for a long time. We let things drive us apart. But even so, I'm sure we would have felt something.
They can't be dead. They were the best of us.
They were bastards just like you!
Suddenly, one of the journalists produced a gun. He put it to another reporter's head, and she stood very still, the blood draining out of her face. Soon the gunman and his hostage stood alone on the landing pad, his gun pressed tight against the woman's head. The guards looked very much like they wanted to do something, but they had no weapons. The gunman had eyes only for Random and Ruby. He glared at them both, his mouth stretched in a desperate snarl.
You try anything and she's dead! I'll blow her head clean off her shoulders!
If she dies, you die.
You think I care?
Let's all be very calm about this. Ruby, get your hand away from your gun. No one needs to get hurt here.
Wrong! Someone's going to die here today!
Better men than you have tried to take us down.
Hush, Ruby, you're not helping.
Jack moved his hands ostentatiously away from his weapons, keeping his eyes fixed on the gunman.
Let's take this one step at a time. Why don't you start by telling us your name?
You don't know me, do you?
No. Should I?
No reason why you should, I suppose. I was just another soldier, fighting beside you in the streets during the rebellion. Right here in this city. My name is Gray Harding. No one important. Just like all the other poor bastards who died fighting your war.
Gray, we all lost people we cared for.
Don't give me that crap, Random! You didn't know us. Didn't care about our little lives. We were all spit players and spear carriers in your great heroic saga. You had the power and the glory. We were just grunts with scavenged weapons. You might love the people as a whole, but in the end, you just used people like us and didn't give a damn whether we lived or died as long as you and your kind came out on top.
It wasn't like that. It was a people's rebellion.
I was there! I saw my friends bleed and die while you went unscathed. I never really gave a damn about your war. Whoever's in charge, life for people like me, people at the bottom, it never really changes. We marched off to war singing because we'd been promised a chance to fight beside living legends. And afterwards, nothing would ever be the same again. But in the end, I saw damn all honor or glory, and most of my family and friends are dead. I saw them fall, one by one, fighting strangers on behalf of strangers. And afterwards, when I went home, I found my village had been destroyed in an Empire reprisal raid. Women and children are homeless and starving now because their menfolk marched off to war and never came back. And after all we paid in blood and suffering and death, nothing's really changed. The same sort of people are still in power. And I can't sleep at night. I did things in the war just to survive. Terrible things. There are ghosts at my shoulder with familiar faces. I jump at loud noises, and sometimes I hurt people for no good reason. I don't know who I am anymore. I'm not the man I used to be, and I'm scared of who I've become. So you tell me, Random, what was it all for, really?
I understand how you feel. I really do. I felt the same way sometimes, but I've learned my lesson. I've come back to Golgotha to clean house. No more deals, no more compromises. I'll put things right this time, or die trying.
Words. You were always good with words, Jack Random.
Look, what do you want? Money? Publicity? Some kind of ransom for your hostage's life?
My hostage? Oh, no. No, she was just to make sure I had your attention. I had to be sure you'd listen to me. Go. Go on. Get out of here.
He turned back to Random and Ruby. The gun pointed nowhere in particular for the moment.
Now it's just you and me.
Put the gun away. You don't need it anymore.
Yeah, I do.
You can't hurt us.
I know that. I'm not stupid. I don't think anything can hurt you anymore. But I've said all that I have to say. And I can't live with the things I did for you. With what I've become.
And with that, Gray Harding calmly put the barrel of the gun in his mouth.
I'm sorry, Gray Harding.
We have nothing to be sorry for. Lionstone had to be brought down for everyone's sake. Where was he when it was just the five of us against the whole damned empire?
We never did see Peter Savage fall on Loki, did we?
People die in wars. Soldiers kill and die. That's what they're for.
He got a chance to fight for something that really mattered. What else is there?
There has to be something else, Ruby. There has to be.
Jack Random! Jack Random! Parliament wishes to speak with you.
Everyone looked around as the parliamentary representative arrived at the landing pad with a company of armed guards. The representative wore his official scarlet sash proudly, but he was careful to keep the bulk of the armed guards between him and Random and Ruby. The reporters brightened up, sensing more possible conflict. Even the ex-hostage stopped sniffing and paid attention. The representative crashed to a halt a respectful distance before Random and Ruby, started to speak, and then took in the dead body lying on the pad with half its head missing. His face lightened three shades, then he straightened his shoulders and did his best to fix Random with a commanding stare.
Let me guess. We're under arrest, right?
Wrong. We don't do arrest.
What does Parliament want this time?
The representative took in Random and Ruby's hostile faces, glanced at the dead body again, and abandoned his carefully prepared speech.
They need you, Maze people. Your power and your insight. And with the Deathstalker and Hazel Dark dead...
You're sure of that? There's no chance they're alive?
Oh, I'm afraid not. Hazel Dark was abducted by the Bloodrunners and taken to the Obia systems. The Deathstalker went after them. Nothing has been heard of either of them since. No one ever comes back from the Obia systems.
Random looked at Ruby.
Try the mental link. We're much stronger together.
They looked into each other's eyes, and their minds slammed together. All around them they could see Esper mines, burning like a forest of candles in the dark of the night. Here and there, a greater mind burned like the sun or shone like a star, while other stranger lights were too powerful to look at directly. Random and Ruby brushed against them as they rose high above the surface of Golgotha, and names swept briefly through their thoughts. Diana Virtue, Mater Mundi, Varney,
right here.
And then they were gone, left behind, as Random and Ruby's thoughts swept out beyond the planet, surging on through the populated worlds that made up the Empire. Lights came and went, some brighter than others, but nowhere did they find any trace of the two individual minds that had blazed brighter than suns or stars. Random and Ruby's thoughts raced from one side of the Empire to the other, and there was no sign anywhere of Owen Deathstalker or Hazel Dark. Random and Ruby fell back into their own minds, and their thoughts separated. They looked at each other for a long time.
They're not here anymore. There's nowhere in this universe they could hide from us.
Then it's true. They're dead. We're the last of the Maze people. The last of the original rebels.
Ruby turned away from him, so he wouldn't see her face.
Hazel was my oldest friend. The only one who ever trusted me. And when I let her down, went right on trusting me anyway. She was my last link with my past, with the person I used to be, before all the madness started. She was a fine warrior and a better friend. I was never worthy of her.
Random moved in beside her, trying to comfort her with his presence. He'd never seen Ruby really hurt before.
We'll both miss her, and the Deathstalker. A good fighter, a true hero. He brought me back from the dead on Mistworld. He believed in me when no one else did. Including me. He made the rebellion possible.
Jack turned back to the Parliament representative.
Take us to Parliament. I have some things I want to say to them.
Parliament was packed full for once. Everyone wanted to hear what Random and Ruby had to say for themselves about the mass executions on Loki. So, of course, Elias Guttman, as Speaker of the House, refused to let either of them say anything until the House had first listened to a series of reports on how the war was going. First up was Captain Eden Cross of the Excalibur, leading his section of the Imperial Fleet against the insect ships out by the Shark Nebulae. A large viewscreen floated on the air before the packed MPs and the even more tightly packed public floor. On the screen, Empire ships went into battle against insect ships, shaped like huge sticky balls of compacted webbing, almost half a mile wide. Computers slowed the action down enough so that human eyes could follow it and picked out moments of special interest. Disruptor beams stabbed out from the fleet, hammering against the unyielding shields of the insect ships, which flared and crackled with unknown energies, striking out in turn at Imperial ships the moment they came in range. Here and there a ship exploded on one side or the other as some attack overwhelmed someone's shields. It looked almost like an eerie dance, with each side advancing and retreating in turn. But every time a ship flared up and disappeared, someone died. Occasionally, an insect ship would fight its way close enough to attach itself to the side of a fleet ship, like a great white leech. And then, the insects would breach the ship's hull and invade the human ship, and kill every living thing they encountered until they were wiped out. Or until the humans were. The scene on the view screen changed suddenly to show Captain Cross on the bridge of the Excalibur. His dark face was thoughtful but focused as he studied the course of the battle. More crew ran back and forth on urgent errands. Captain Cross gave orders in a calm, professional manner, and only when he was sure he could spare the time did he turn to look out of the view screen at Parliament.
As you can see, we're rather busy at the moment, so I'll try and keep this short. We've come up with a few new tactics that seem to be bringing us a measure of success at last. The insects are hard to kill, but they have their weaknesses. Battle espers are the key. If we can fight our way close enough to an insect ship and hold our position long enough, the battle espers can sever the mental link between the ship's queen and her warrior drones. Without a queen to guide them, they're just insects with no purpose of their own, sitting ducks. Ugh. The problem is getting close enough without getting our asses shot off in the process.
A workstation exploded in smoke and flames, and his bridge lurched. Somebody hit the station with a foam extinguisher, but the operator was already beyond saving. A security man put the poor bastard out of his misery. Cross turned away from the screen and studied the instruments before him.
I'll have to get back to you later. We're almost close enough to take out a queen, or possibly vice versa. Someone will contact you again once the battle is over. Excalibur out.
The view screen became clear again.
Our next report comes from the planet Aquarius Rising. The fleet there is dealing with a newly discovered Haydenman nest on that world.
The view screen now showed E-class star cruisers clashing with golden Haydenman ships over a large blue world. The infamous golden ships of legend were huge, bigger than cities, but caught in a battle in local space, their size became irrelevant. The firepower of the two types of ship was pretty much equal, and vast destructive energies passed between the heavily shielded vessels. The great ships whirled and clashed, with no quarter asked or given on either side. Humanity would never trust the Haydenmen again. Here and there, broken ships spouting radioactive fires spiraled slowly end over end down toward the planet's atmosphere and a fiery demise. The view changed to show D-class star cruisers in low orbit, pounding the exposed Haydenman nest with everything they had. Stabbing disruptor beams plunged down through the atmosphere, tearing the shining metal structures apart and blowing up the energy centers. More scenes came, overlapping views from communication probes dropped by the Empire ships. Haydenmen ran desperately through burning streets, trying to reach their escape ships, only to find them shattered and destroyed on cratered landing pads. The few Haydenman craft that did manage to get off the ground were blown apart before they even left the atmosphere. Some of the augmented men fought back from unfamiliar weapon stations, and strange energies flew up to shudder against the Star Cruiser's shields. But one by one, the stations were identified and blown apart by pinpoint disruptor accuracy. Foot by foot, augmented man by augmented man, the nest was destroyed. Radiation levels rose dramatically on Aquarius Rising. The air and the water and the earth would be poisonous for centuries. Where the nest had been, there was in the end only a great volcanic crater, spewing dust and smoke and magma high up into the atmosphere. Earthquakes tore across the continent and gave the lands new shapes. The blazing hulks of golden ships fell from the skies like fiery meteors. Aquarius Rising had been a pleasure world once. The Empire destroyed it to save it from the curse of the Haydenman.
And that was one of our victories. We're discovering new nests all the time. The Haydenmen took good advantage of our misplaced trust to seed themselves all across the Empire. We were fortunate indeed that the Deathstalker and his allies were able to destroy New Hayden, before it could become the communications center that would have linked the nests together. However, only E-class star cruisers have the speed and the firepower to equal the Golden Ships, and their numbers have never been more limited than now. Next up, we have a report on how the ground wars are going against Shub's forces on the Outer Worlds.
The screen revealed a montage of swiftly changing images, showing great armies of Imperial Marines clashing with equally large armies of Ghost Warriors, Furies, and Grendels, the legions of the dead and the damned. Swords flashed and energy weapons flared, and the dead and the dying lay everywhere. The Marines fought bravely, often to the last man, but their victories were few and far between. Often the best they could manage was a bloody standing action, holding their ground in the desperate hope of reinforcements. The Marines had to burn their own dead to prevent Shub raising them again as Ghost Warriors. Battle Espers were the Empire's only match for the machines in the form of men, the Furies, but there weren't enough of them to go around. Rushed from one danger point to the next, with never any time to rest, they died by inches from fatigue and the restraining of their powers, but still fighting bravely for as long as they could. No one was stupid enough to face the Grendels head on. The Scarlet Devils swarmed unstoppably forward on all fronts, killing every living thing they encountered. The Marines' current best tactics involved using themselves as bait to lure the Grendels into an enclosed space, and then blowing the whole area sky high with previously placed explosives. Unfortunately, the Grendels were very hard to kill. Sometimes the charges did the job, and sometimes they didn't. And either way, there always seemed to be more of the Crimson Aliens to replace those who fell.
And just to further complicate things, the Grendels seem to be throwing off their Shub controls and attacking the Shub forces as well as ours. This was considered good news, until it was discovered the Oaked Grendels we'd been using as advanced troops were also rejecting their conditioning and turning on our troops. The Grendels are becoming wild cards in this war, completely unpredictable. There's also some evidence that the Grendels have been showing signs of increasing intelligence. Apparently, the harder you hit them, the faster they adapt to meet the new conditions.
The MPs and honored guests looked at one another, but no one seemed to have anything to say. Gutman looked out over the packed crowd till his eyes fell on Jack Random and Ruby Journey, and then he gestured for them to approach him. They did so, taking their time about it. People still hurried to fall back out of their way. Random and Ruby were used to respect, but naked fear was new to them. Ruby quite liked it. Eventually, they came to a halt before Elias Gutman on his raised dais, and he looked down on them with all the authority he could muster.
Well, do either of you have any comments you'd care to make on what we've just seen?
We're getting our ass kicked! We're outnumbered, outgunned, and using outdated tactics. Either we get our act together soon, or the whole damned human empire will be nothing more than a footnote in something else's history books.
Diplomatic as ever, Ruby.
Listen, Gutman. We can't face this many enemies on so many scattered fronts. We're potentially a match for any one of our enemies, maybe even including Shub. But dispersed as we are, we're too ineffective to achieve any real victories. Our only real hope is to get our enemies fighting each other.
We're working on it. In the meantime, however, we need a secret weapon. Something powerful enough to reverse our losses and buy us valuable time to work out new tactics.
You're talking about the Dark Void device. And the answer's still no. Some cures are worse than the disease.
If you'd allow me to finish, Sir Random, I was about to say we need you and Ruby Journey. Your maze powers have so far proved superior to everything that's been thrown at you. So, if you will agree to fight on the front lines as humanity's defenders, Parliament is prepared to offer you both official pardons for the crimes and atrocities you perpetrated on the planet Loki against the rightly appointed government there.
I gave all the orders and the responsibility is all mine. But since I've done nothing wrong, your offer of a pardon is basically irrelevant. I'm proud of what I did on Loki. Still, much as I hate to agree with you on anything, you're right on one thing. We are needed. We might just be able to tip the balance. And with Owen and Hazel gone, we are the last of the Maze people. We have a duty to use our powers in the defense of humanity.
And then the view screen suddenly came to life again, with a new report coming in. Gutman frowned as he listened to something on a secure channel on his comm implant.
We're getting live feed from Virgil 3, the latest planet infected with a new plague. No ships are allowed past high orbit, but they've sent down probes to take a look at what's happening.
Automated probes swept through the streets of what had once been a human city. No transport was running, though some automated machinery continued here and there, to no purpose anymore. Some buildings had been set on fire by their occupants, and thick black smoke drifted on the disturbed air. And in the streets, running or stumbling or crawling, there were monsters. Things that had once been people, but were no longer. Men and women had been transformed by the plague into nightmare shapes of jutting bone and hideously stretched skin. Strange new organs had formed on the outside of their bodies, black and pulsing, with inhuman properties and purposes. Long curving horns strung with strings of neurons glistened on elongated heads, and legs at three or four joints. Human growth gone mad, without restraint or reason. Monsters lurched and stumbled through the streets, with insect eyes and too many limbs, tormented by inhuman hungers and desires. Occasionally, a long tentacle would whip up from a shadowed alleyway to snatch a probe from the air and crush it. Some of Virgil 3's people had progressed even beyond that. After the monsters came the next and most feared stage of the plague, meltdown. The body lost all shape and structure, collapsing into liquid protoplasmic goo. There were whole cities now on abandoned worlds where nothing moved but great tides and rivers of accumulated slime. Whole populations reduced to little more than massive amoebas. That was the new plague, the transformation disease, and its inevitable end. There was no cure, no idea as to its origin or nature or how it spread. The only effective answer was planetary quarantine. So far, 7 planets had had to be abandoned to their fate. The plague appeared spontaneously, with no obvious cause or carriers, and no clear link with any of the other affected planets. An unnatural disease of tech run wild, nanotech. Individual machines the size of molecules that could remake a living organism from within. The one technology too awful and too dangerous even for the old empire to use. When the view screen shut down, the monsters thankfully disappeared. No one in the assembled felt like saying anything. Some people were being sick. Random frowned.
There's no question this is nanotech.
None.
And the answer's obvious. Someone has to reopen 00.
The people around Jack flinched back from the last two words as though he'd spat at them. Some crossed themselves. 00 was the world used in the Empire's first tentative experiments with nanotech, hundreds of years earlier. It all went terribly wrong, terribly quickly. The nanotech somehow escaped the confines of the scientific base and ran wild. The whole population of colonists was wiped out. The entire natural order of the planet was transformed and violated in terrifying ways, and the last few scientists left in the base, locked in their isolation chamber, died screaming for help that never came. 00 was quarantined, and nanotech was banned. Officially. Randa was one of the few people who knew Lionstone had briefly dabbled in nanotech in an isolated lab on the planet Vojinai 4. The lab had self-destructed under mysterious circumstances, and that put an end to that. Even Lionstone had enough sense to be afraid of nanotech.
Nanotech is forbidden, and with good reason. If what happened on 00 had got off planet,
but it didn't. So its secrets should still be intact. If we want an answer to the nanotech plague, 00 is the only place we might hope to find one.
Are you volunteering to go there, Sir Random?
Hell no. I'm not crazy, but I can think of one brave, honorable, and very dutiful captain who might just be crazy enough to do it.
Of course, the good Captain Silence, currently on his way to the Dark Void. He shouldn't be too upset by a chance to put that off by stopping somewhere else first. And the good captain has always been the most dutiful man.
Not to mention expendable.
Yes, best not to.
Elias Gutman looked out at his audience, who by now were hanging on his every word.
Just to reassure everyone that the best scientific minds in the Empire haven't been entirely idle concerning this matter, I can also tell you they've established contact with a small scientific group on World 4, a hell world right out on the edge of the Rim. The Hell Squad assigned to investigate this new world apparently discovered an ancient race of shape-changing aliens, whose nature might also be based around nanotech. Always best to have more than one iron in the fire. Now, let us move on to the next item on the agenda.
You mean that bit of paper in your hand, covered in your usual indecipherable scrawl? Since when did you start deciding the house's agenda?
Ever since things got so busy around here that the house didn't have time. There is a war on, you know. Several wars, to be exact. We haven't all been hiding out on backwater planets.
Hiding out?
The next item concerns the dragon's teeth. People who supposedly lost their minds in the computer matrix and now have only Shub's thoughts in their heads. An army of Shub spies walking undetected amongst us.
There's no supposedly about it.
There's been no actual evidence to support the theory yet.
Only because you won't allow the Espers to run random tests on the population.
Would you let an Esper scan your mind?
Wouldn't bother me. Of course, how they coped with what they found there would be their problem. My head's a weird place these days.
It always was.
Guess who's sleeping on the couch tonight? Esper scans are vital.
Diana Virtue strode through the packed house, the crowd falling back to open up a narrow aisle for her. It had been a while since the short, scowling blonde woman had gone by the name Jenny Psycho, but enough of her old malevolent persona still crackled about her to push back even the most tightly packed crowd. No one wanted to get too close to a human time bomb. She came to a halt beside Random, gave him a quick nod, and then glared up at Gutman, who looked uneasy for the first time. Diana gave him her best disturbing smile.
Listen to me, fat man. It's essential this house authorizes the mass screening of the population by the Esper fraternity right damn now. There are too many people walking about who probably aren't people anymore. We're talking dragon's teeth, ghost warriors, furies, and who knows what else. Shub has remote control teleportation. It could have planted any number of disguised agents here on Homeworld, and the only sure way we have of rooting them out is mind scanning. Set up booths in every city, and require people to walk past them twice a day. Computer records will spot anyone who tries to dodge. Of course, all private and public ESP blockers will have to be destroyed.
Of course, and that's what this is really all about. You want all ESP blockers to be destroyed because they're the only defense normal people have against ESP's invasion of their thoughts.
We want ESP blockers destroyed to free the living brains that power them.
And so you Espers can peep inside all our heads, see our personal thoughts and secrets. That kind of knowledge would give you one hell of a hold over the rest of us, wouldn't it?
We wouldn't need to invade anyone's privacy just to detect non-human thoughts.
We only have your word for that, Esper. Information is currency right now, and we all have secrets we'd rather die than share.
We'll discuss this again when everyone's feeling a little more rational.
It'll be a long wait.
Moving on, we come to a rather delicate issue. This house refrained from discussing it until some of the Maze people had returned, because you were the only people with direct knowledge of the subject. But the situation is becoming increasingly pressing.
Jock, what the hell is he talking about?
The end of everything. He's talking about the Dark Void device.
It was suddenly very quiet again in the house. Everyone was looking at Random and Ruby. Random could feel the pressure of their eyes on the back of his head. Even Diana Virtue was looking at him strangely.
Things are bad now, and I can understand the attraction of a super weapon that could end the war in a moment. But you'd have to be on the edge of actual extinction to seriously consider letting this genie out of its bottle again. The last time the device was activated, it put out 1,000 suns in a moment. Billions of people died. Who gets to die this time that the rest of us might live? Even assuming we knew how to operate the device safely, which we don't.
But you know where it is.
Sort of. We know where it used to be, but there's no guarantee it's still there. And like Jack said, we don't know how to turn it on. Or off. You want to risk destroying the whole of humanity?
We're already at risk.
Hold everything. Is that why you're sending Silence back into the Dark Void? Because he's the only other person who's been to the Wolfling world? Have you sent him after the Dark Void device?
Captain Silence has always understood his duty.
He doesn't know the nature of the device, or how to find it, or how to make it work.
The good captain has always been very resourceful, and he did pass partway through the madness maze and survive.
I won't allow this. I didn't save the Empire from Lionstone just to see humanity destroyed by its own stupidity.
There you go again, Sir Jack. Deciding you alone know what's best for humanity. Parliament represents the people. We decide what is best, what is necessary. Not an over-the-hill rebel who can no longer be trusted to act rationally. We all know what you did on Loki.
I hanged a bunch of people who needed hanging. They were all guilty, all dirty, all politicians.
We're willing to listen to reason. Convince us. Tell us about the Dark Void device. What it is, how it does what it does. Who knows? You might even bring us around to your position.
I can't.
Can't or won't?
Some things you're better off not knowing. You're all just going to have to trust me on this.
Why should we?
Everyone stared about them, thrown off balance. The general alarm was never sounded for anything less than imminent planet-wide peril. Or worse.
Attention, attention. Urgent information arriving.
The great viewscreen lit up again, and a grim face stared out at the house.
This is Captain Shang of the Dread Star. On patrol on the Rim, observing the Dark Void. The Recreated are here. They're breaking out. We can't stop them. Hell, they're smashing through us like we're not even here. I'm switching to exterior sensors, so you can see what we're seeing.
The captain's desperate face vanished, replaced by humanity's first view of the Recreated. Their ships were huge and awful, given a sense of scale by the tiny specks that were the patrolling Imperial ships. The Recreated's vessels made no sense, and it hurt to look at them, as though the ships existed in more than three dimensions at once. The ships were bigger than mountains, and there seemed no end to their numbers as they streamed implacably out of the Dark Void, across the Rim, and into human space. The handful of Imperial ships were firing every gun they had, to no avail. The Empire ships were just ignored, like ants at the feet of conquering giants. Random suddenly became aware of energy spitting and crackling beside him, and a strong smell of ionized air.
It's them. They're back.
Random looked around, and there was half a man, staring with his one horrified eye at the ships on the viewscreen. The aliens who had abducted him, tortured him, and finally returned only half his body, bound eternally to a living energy construct for his other half. The aliens whose coming the Empire had feared for centuries. The aliens who would treat humanity the way humanity had always treated aliens. The great nightmare of all humanity had finally come out of the endless night to destroy them all. A sound came out of the viewscreen. People in the house put their hands over their ears, but couldn't shut it out. The few Espers present were crying tears of blood. Diana Virtue was baring her teeth in a snarl that was pure Jenny Psycho. On the viewscreen, the Imperial ships were exploding one by one. The scene cut back to the Dreadstar's bridge and Captain Shang. Blood was coursing down his face from where he'd torn out his own eyes. Behind him, his maddened crew were killing one another. Shang was trying to say something, but he couldn't be heard over the endless, maddening howl. And then, the viewscreen went blank. People in the packed house began to cautiously lower their hands from their ears. Many were panting heavily, fighting for breath, as though they'd been fighting some physical enemy. Some had passed out, and some of the Espers were dead.
Communication from the Rim has ceased. Contact cannot be established with any of the ships, awaiting further instructions.
They're back. The Recreated have finally come out of the dark to destroy us all.
The house was quiet. No one knew what to say. Half a man's alien abductors had been the nightmare boogeyman of all humanity for centuries, only really half believed in, but still passed down from generation to generation as an awful warning. And now here they were, at last. as though the monsters from under a child's bed had waited till the child had grown up, and then come hammering on his front door. Even Jack Random and Ruby Journey were silent, their courage and confidence stripped away by long-forgotten childhood fears. And then Elias Gutman stood up, and everyone turned to look at him.
Well, General Beckett will undoubtedly be gathering together every ship he can to face this new threat. I'm sure this house will wish to support him in every way possible.
He looked around him, but still no one said anything. Gutman scowled.
We all knew the Recreated would make their appearance eventually. Their timing could have been better, but that's the way our luck's been going recently. So, Half-A-Man, you have the most experience with these aliens. We will put a fast ship at your disposal immediately. I'm sure you'll wish to confer with General Beckett as soon as possible. With the two of you leading our forces against the Recreated...
No. I'm not going.
Everyone turned to look at Half-A-Man. He stared impassively back with the human side of his face.
But your advice on dealing with these aliens will be invaluable. You can do far more good with Beckett's fleet than you can here.
I'm not going. There's no point. We can't beat them, we can't stop them, and there's nowhere we can run. There's nothing I or the fleet can do to save you. Every species has to face its own extinction eventually.
He turned and walked away, and for a long, long time after he left the house, no one had anything to say.